listening to New England Public Radio News. I'm Adam Frenier, and this is the shortlist NEPR's Week in Review. With us today, Natalia Munoz, host of Vaya con Munoz on WHMP, and Rick Hurst, publisher of An African-American Point of View. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
Well, the MGM Casino has been open for a week, and casino officials tell Mass Live in the first 3 days the resort was open, 150,000 people came to visit. While the casino is open, the project isn't entirely complete. MGM promised to build 54 market-rate apartments in the area. The city gave the company an 18-month extension for this. Mike Fenton is the chair of the City Council's Casino Committee.
Due to a variety of factors, many of which admittedly were outside of MGM's control, we still do not have a location for those units which were promised to the taxpayers.
State regulators want MGM to decide by March if they're going to keep pursuing a property on Court Square, and MGM says they remain committed to the project. So, Natalia, do you think city officials should be worried about these apartments not becoming reality?
Well, there comes a point where the city of Springfield needs to stop relying on MGM to be the savior for everything. I don't know that this is a promise to the taxpayers as much as it's a promise to the city of Springfield to create to have more apartments that then they can help raise more income from property taxes. I think Springfield should have a plan B and a plan C and not keep saying that MGM is plan A.
But MGM did actually commit to this.
I understand that they actually committed, but, you know, It's a volatile environment that we're living in, and we don't know today what 6 months is going to look like in terms of the economy, in terms of Wall Street, of where the Dow is.
Rick, what about you, and how important are these units to the overall project?
I think they're important, but, you know, they committed to putting apartments in the old school department building. They committed to a high tower at one point in time. And now they're committed to this Court Square project. But I got to give MGM the credit that they deserve because I'm the biggest skeptic that they'll ever have. I've watched what they've done. I visited it three times now, two times before it opened and the third time the day after it opened. I didn't know, visit the day it opened. But, you know, they have kept almost every promise they made. And the one that pleases me the most is I walked through the area. They had people from Springfield, black, brown, white. I mean, they did have the diversity they committed to. And the facility itself is really tremendous.
Natalia, have you had a chance to visit?
No, but I've been around in these last few days. And I was actually in the city the day before the great opening of the MGM Casino and saw lots of employees marching down Main Street. But even just today, walking to the studio here, I don't feel a different vibe in Springfield. I don't feel like there's tons of traffic or tons of people walking in this area where the casino is. So when I hear, and I read this, 150,000 people in the last few days, I think, where did they come from? Did they go in and go out, go in and go out, go in and go out?
There were crowds, but 150 did sound a little large to me from the days I was there.
Tuesday is primary election day in Massachusetts, and there are Democratic and Republican races for governor. On the GOP side, incumbent Charlie Baker remains one of the most popular governors in the country, and he's banked a lot of money, too, as he faces Scott Lively. But on the Democratic side, Jay Gonzalez and Bob Massey have struggled to raise funds, and one poll suggests they're having trouble with name recognition, too. Rick, is there a policy issue that Gonzalez or Massey should be looking to take up that might be popular among voters?
To be frank with you, I just don't think they have a chance of a snowball in Satan's house. I just don't. I think Charlie Baker has a popularity that is just different from what we're accustomed to. And I don't think that anybody can really challenge him. These two guys are good guys. Massey's an outsider, so I'm biased toward him. Gonzalez is an insider. But neither one of them has the name recognition.
Natalia, depending on who wins, do either Gonzalez or Massey have a chance to launch a viable campaign for the November race?
Sure. I mean, we've had surprises before. I'm thinking way back to, you know, 2006. Does a junior senator named Barack Obama have a chance at becoming president of the United States? And remember when a lot of people, myself included, said, no. And 8 years later, he handed the torch to the guy who's in the White House right now.
You must admit he stood out a little more than these two guys.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Also on Tuesday, there are many primary elections for state legislative races. One big one is the Democratic race for the seat formerly held by State Senator Stan Rosenberg. He resigned amid a scandal involving his husband 2 days after the candidate filing deadline. That left only Democrat Chelsea Klein on the ballot, but three others are running as write-ins, and they tell me that they've had to spend a lot of time educating voters on just how to write their names in on the ballot. Northampton City Clerk Pam Powers also told me that come Election Day, poll workers can only do so much.
We can help people determine how to fill out their ballot, but as far as the write-in candidates themselves, we cannot offer any sort of information to the voter.
And in communities that use those old-fashioned paper ballots, there are questions about where exactly voters should actually write in the candidate's name. Natalia, do state election officials need to look at simplifying this process, or is this just the perils of running as a write-in?
Absolutely. When they're write-in candidates, the state should help the voters, not make it more difficult for voters to figure out who to write in, but to make it easier. We want to bring more people into democracy. And I believe that's what our taxpayer money should go to. How do we bring more people into democracy? It is unclear. And I'm a longtime voter, and I'm a little bit, worried about come Tuesday, where exactly do I put my vote for the write-in candidates?
And Rick, there's going to be a lot of poll workers that have to count all of these by hand, and they're going to have to make judgment calls on what a voter's intent was when they're tallying things up Tuesday night. Could voter confusion end up playing a role in this race that has a pretty large field with four candidates?
That's always been the case with write-in voting. Yes, there's going to be voter confusion. I agree with Natalia's wish to have as many voters come out as possible, but I do have a different perspective on write-in voting. There are people who had the courage to jump into the race when the incumbents were active, and they did the work. Folks who waited afterwards and found out, hey, maybe I should have jumped in earlier, and now they want better write-in system. I don't feel so good about that. I really am biased against people who hold off. Cheryl Rivera, by the way, is one of those who jumped into the race when the incumbent was there. And now she's got a write-in competitor. I don't feel that badly for the competitor, although I agree generally we should make voting as easy as possible.
Of course, Rick, referring to the Hampden County Register of Deeds race. All right, Rick Hurst of An African-American Point of View and Natalia Munoz of Viacom Munoz on WHMP. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
And thank you, our loyal listeners of The Shortlist, NEPR's Week in Review. Remember, you can catch us at any time wherever you get your podcasts or at nepr.net/podcast hub. I'm Adam Frenier, and this is New England Public Radio.